CBS News Brief. President Biden just addressed the possibility of an Iranian attack on Israel. He says his message to Iran about launching an assault is don't.
We are devoted to the defense of Israel. We will support Israel. We will help defend Israel, and Iran will not succeed.
A Texas state senator says a truck that hit a public safety office near Houston was an intentional crash. CBS's Elaine Quijano.
Several people have been seriously injured after a stolen 18-wheeler crashed into a Department of Public Safety building.
Roku says it was hacked for the second time this year. CBS News tech contributor Ian Schur.
This hack is affecting a small percentage of the 80 million active user accounts the company says it has, but it's still unsettling.
And Italian fashion designer Roberto Cavalli has died. His company announced the news on Instagram. He was 83 years old. CBS News Brief, I'm Wendy Gillette.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A man is in jail in Milwaukee in connection with a severed leg found in a park in Cudahy Tuesday. Authorities are calling him a person of interest. The FBI and local and state investigators spent several hours searching the man's home on Thursday. Body parts have been turning up across the Milwaukee area over the past 2 weeks. Wisconsin has 3 years to meet the federal government's higher new standards for PFAS in drinking water. Advocates like Clean Water Action's Lynn Thorpe say policymakers are taking the PFAS problem seriously.
I will say that the process has moved relatively rapidly, and I think that's a reflection of the seriousness of the problem.
The legislature's Joint Finance Committee meets soon to consider Governor Evers' request for $125 million for PFAS cleanup. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. A River Falls man has been sentenced to 20 years in prison after pleading guilty to sex trafficking. According to a press release from the Western Wisconsin U.S. Attorney's Office, 30-year-old Austin Kokoritz pleaded guilty to compelling a young woman to perform commercial sex acts online between August 2020 and August 2022, and sex trafficking a minor between October 2021 and January 2022. Kokoritz was accused of using force, threats of force, fraud, and coercion to harass the victims. Nikolai Mew has been found guilty of first-degree reckless homicide after an 8-day trial in St. Croix County. The 56-year-old Prior Lake man was arrested in 2022 after stabbing 5 people on the Apple River, killing 17-year-old Isaac Schumann in the process. Mew was also found guilty on 4 counts of first-degree recklessly endangering safety involving the 4 victims who were not killed, as well as battery. Mew's attorney, Corey Chirafisi, who represented Kyle Rittenhouse, argued he was acting in self-defense. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
Earl Ingram.
Let's talk a little bit about what public education did to move this nation forward and continues to do, even though it's under assault.
The one place where we get to live out and practice what it means to be a citizen in a democratic institution. The attacks on public education are really attacks on democracy.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The Brewers head to Baltimore. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers opened a weekend series against the Orioles at Camden Yards. Yesterday's game with the Reds got rained out in Cincinnati. Rescheduled as a doubleheader in August. NBA, the Bucks in Oklahoma City to take on the Thunder tonight. The Bucks coming off wins over the Celtics and Orlando Magic. NFL, the Packers on the tailgate tour headed to Brazil this fall to take on the Eagles for the opener. I asked Kenny Clark.
You know anybody that's been to Brazil?
I went there a couple years ago. Actually.
You did?
I was in Rio. And I had an amazing time, man. There's so many Packer fans out there, so many football fans out there. I went during the Super Bowl and watched the Super Bowl at a bar, and the energy there was amazing. I can only imagine, you know, what the experience we're going to have when we out there actually playing a football game in Brazil. The fans are going to be amazing.
So LaFleur's coming to you for tips on how to get around Brazil.
yeah. You're going to have to come to me for the tips.
That's Packers defensive lineman Kenny Clark. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Mostly sunny today and a bit breezy as winds are whipping out of the northwest at 30 miles per hour, dragging our high temperatures down to the mid-50s. Sunshine stays abundant the entire weekend, and we flirt with the 70s by tomorrow and put that on repeat for Sunday, too. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 57.
How was your drive to school?
Let me tell you, I had to get my iced coffee first. I just can't seem to put it down. My favorite rapper just announced a tour. My phone was buzzing like crazy. I'm so excited. I had to text all my friends right then to talk about it. Then someone started calling me and...
Let's try that again.
I turned my phone off right away. I never drive distracted.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Coming up Monday on Matt Nair On Air, three headlines and a lie, and it's tax day. I hope you'll join us.
Local talk about our hometown and all of Wisconsin has gone untapped until now. You're on 93.5 The Tap. Make sure and tell your friends.
Welcome, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's coming down fast now, Calvin. The rain just cracked. The sky's cracked open, and the rain is coming down now fast here at the WAUK. But you can hear me statewide on all Civic Media radio stations, as well as on the Civic Media app. Just go grab that sucker wherever you get your apps. It is free. Thanks to Steve Jensen. Thanks to Sherry Manazzi. All sorts of folks on the chat and text lines. Kurt, I know he's been listening from Madison. Thanks, everybody, for participating in the discussion last hour. I hope I took everybody through. I know it can be wonky at times, but explaining why Aileen Cannon, Judge Cannon, who's presiding over Donald Trump's documents trial, needs to go. She just can't get it right. Can't read the law right. And I think our friend Jesse, our regular caller and listener from Madison, got it on point when he said it's bad faith that she's operating with. And I couldn't agree more. And I think we've got the smoking gun. If you missed that smoking gun, go to civicmedia.us and check out the first part of my show. For the next part of the show this afternoon, I wanted to discuss a bit about Mr. O.J. Simpson, who just passed away of cancer at age, I believe he was 76. I was a freshman in college when his trial happened, and I watched the trial on this tiny little VHS TV combo that was maybe, you know, those tiny little ones with the bubble screens that were maybe 12 inches or something like that, sitting on a rickety futon underneath my lofted dorm room beds in Marquette University's McCormick Hall. That was the beer can that sat on 16th Street and Wisconsin Avenue. I was mesmerized. I watched the Bronco. I watched his ultimate surrender, and I watched the trial. I couldn't believe it. And I was also very aware and paid an incredible amount of attention to Rodney King's beating at the hands of LA police and the acquittal that occurred prior to the O.J. Simpson saga. And I just remember being so completely shocked beyond my imagination or conception. It was really, it challenged my faith. And it was really, I think, as a young person, it was one of the first times I saw with very clear eyes, no rose-colored glasses, that our legal system isn't always a justice system, but it's simply the system that we have agreed upon to resolve some of the most horrific conflicts that we can imagine. Now, I reached out to Mr. James Causey, Journal Sentinel reporter extraordinaire, because he put out a really, I think, thought-provoking, on-point op-ed think piece about O.J. Simpson's passing that just came out yesterday in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Mr. Causey's going to see if he can join us this afternoon. We don't yet have him. But never fear, my friends, because Terry Barr is here to join the Maggie Dawn Show and share some of her recollections and experiences in an interview that Terry did back at that time. Welcome, Terry. It's always nice to have you on my show.
Thanks, Maggie. You know, so interesting you talking about watching the trial and the verdict. You were one of 100 million people that watched that verdict come down, and that's almost 30 years ago. And I was just thinking yesterday that for many young people, they probably had to go back into history to figure out what this was all about if they weren't even born 30 years ago. I also found it an interesting note that OJ passed during April, and April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. There's just a little irony there, I believe, and I was being hit by a lot of people yesterday, remembering the work that we had done in Northeast Wisconsin, the interview that I had the opportunity to do with Denise Brown, Nicole Brown, Simpson's sister, and then again, just the mention of April being Sexual Assault Awareness Month. It's odd, isn't it? My goodness.
Yeah, there's so much that happened during that period of time in, was it 1996? Was that in 96? I think it was 96.
Spring. Nicole Brown Simpson was murdered in 94.
Okay, so, yeah. And it would have taken about that long to come through the whole system. If you want to share your thoughts and recollections, we've got some folks chiming in on Facebook. People taped the trial. It was kind of like must-watch TV, and it was so gruesome. And it's not lost on me, Terry, that at the very moment we're having this discussion and observing and recollecting the horrificness of that crime and of what the legal system process was and the failure of that system to vindicate Mr. King's right, the failure of the system to the entire Black community, and the foil that the OJ trial became for so much of that sense of betrayal. For a man who himself, and Mr. Causey points this out, I had seen the same documentary that Mr. Causey mentions in his Journal Sentinel piece, OJ Made in America. OJ used to say, "I'm not Black, I'm OJ." Because he thought of himself, by that statement, I would infer, as sort of having transcended his race, had become such a mainstay, such a famous person in the United States. I can't believe we're having this discussion today on the very day that Milwaukee County Sheriff Danita Ball and Police Chief Norman got up to address the dismemberment and murder of a young Black woman by a white guy in one of the most grisly murders in Milwaukee history. I don't know really what to think of all of it. And I'm really appreciative, Terry, that you were willing to come on and kind of talk through and struggle through some of this with me.
What
were you doing, Maggie, when the Bronco was driving around? Do you remember those moments yourself?
You know, those are those moments that stick in your mind forever. It's kind of like September 11th. this moment with the Bronco Chase, believe it or not, I was with three of my best girlfriends in New Orleans.
Wow.
And two of the three worked with me in television news. And you can imagine, yes, we were absolutely glued to the TV in one of the New Orleans establishments.
Yeah, I couldn't believe what I was seeing back then. It was just, where is he going? What is he going to do? None of it made a lot of sense.
Well, and then I was getting a call later from my husband, who was out with a friend. And it was interesting to hear them say, it's OJ. How can this be happening? It's OJ.
Yes.
So it almost goes back to that, what you were saying about he became this bigger than life figure. And then when something horrible happens and people are accusing that big figure, it's almost like you can't quite wrap everything around your brain with it.
Yeah, it. I mean, and all of it seemed every bit of the OJ case was sort of more unbelievable than the next. I mean, you start with the Bronco, right? And then the legal defense team, which was given the moniker the Dream Team, which was a ripoff and echo of the first pro basketball players that represented the United States in the Olympics, right? It was like Michael Jordan. And so they called themselves the Dream Team. It was the rise of Johnny Cochran, Robert Kardashian, right?
Yep.
We got the bloody glove in court, the discussion of Marcia Clark's hairdo, right?
Yes.
Furman using the N-word. It became this incredible, almost referendum on racism in the LAPD. It was like, well, you'll vote to acquit OJ if you believe that racism in the LAPD is a real thing, right? That there was a bit, there was atmospherics of that. And of course, the incompetent Lance Ito. You know, I spent the first hour of my show talking about how incompetent Aileen Cannon is in one of the trials of the century, right? In this century. And, you know, the trial of last century was also beset and burdened by an incompetent jurist. Of course. Oh, my gosh. I forgot about Cato Kalin, Wisconsin's own, the weird house guest in the back.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That got very strange when all of a sudden, we're in Wisconsin going, oh, no. we have a direct line to this case. Yeah.
Yes. Harris, Nick D. Harris, texting in on the Facebook line, watching the Rodney King beating was painful. Watching the OJ trial was painful to me. I remember feeling, I remember it was a sunny day out. The window was to my right. I was leaned back in the futon. It was a dark green futon. And I was watching the TV when the verdict came down. And I remember I actually choked up. And having this sense, and I felt the same way, just devastated when in 1992, those police officers were acquitted by a jury that had not a single African-American on it for the beating of Rodney King. If you can stick around, Terry, we're going to come back in just a couple of quick messages here. This is a real short break. Don't go anywhere, anybody. If you want to share your thoughts, 855-75-CIVIC. 855-752-4842. Back in just a moment, folks.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Most of us can agree the decision to have an abortion should be between a person and their doctor. Politicians should have no say at all. Thankfully, Senator Tammy Baldwin is standing up for our rights and working to keep politicians out of our medical decisions. After Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights was overturned, Tammy Baldwin introduced the Women's Health Protection Act, which would ensure access to abortion everywhere in the United States, including here in Wisconsin. The bill would end extreme abortion bans that have no exceptions for rape, incest, or the life of the mother, and threaten doctors with criminal charges for providing abortion care. Senator Baldwin also introduced legislation that would protect the right to travel across state lines for reproductive health care and safeguard access to contraception. Call Senator Tammy Baldwin at 202-224-5653. Tell her thank you for fighting back against extreme abortion bans. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're having a moment of pause and reflection on what was an incredibly difficult number of years in the mid-90s. We still hear echoes of some of it today. What really started off with the beating of Rodney King by white police officers caught on video from a distance. It was just a brutal beating. The then acquittal of all those white police officers, LAPD officers, by a jury that didn't have a single single black person on it in Los Angeles, that then begat an uprising by black folks in Los Angeles that ended up where Reginald Denny, much like Rodney King, was pulled from his car by police and beaten on the street. And after the acquittal, Reginald Denny was pulled from his truck and beaten on the streets. And then O.J. Simpson, you know, killed, and I'm going to say killed, there's no question, he was civilly convicted, if you will. Convicted's not the right word, but he was civilly found liable for the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. Goldman, am I recalling his name correctly? Help me here, Terry.
Yes. Yes, you are. Yes. Yeah. Yep.
And then the acquittal and all of these things. It seemed the thing that popped to my mind and I remember the feelings that I was having reliving them. I think it's part of the reason I became a lawyer. I thought this can't be. And what by far the most clear thought that I had and still have about those days and about many things that still end up in our newspapers is that injustice begets more injustice.
Yes.
Right. And I think, you know, mm-hmm. the that sequence of events, there is cause and effect there back in the 90s. And we see some of those same echoes today. You mentioned, Terry, that you interviewed Nicole Brown Simpson's sister, Denise. What was that experience like?
Well, in part, due to this event in our history, Northeast Wisconsin created a Take Back the Night event in April. And it was a gathering where we would invite everyone to come as a community, get together, march around the city, and tell their stories. And I got involved in that around this time when Nicole Brown Simpson was found murdered. And because of my involvement, I then had heard through the grapevine that Denise Brown was considering going out and talking to people about what she believed happened to her sister. So I kind of did the reporter thing where I figured out how to get a hold of her, tracked her down. And Nicole was murdered in 94. Denise Brown and I sat down for the one of the very first interviews she ever did in 1995. And she never mentioned, and I don't think she still has, she never mentions OJ's name. But she really dives into everything she remembered seeing going on with her sister, all the signs, all the time she ended up in the hospital. And Denise Brown, I think one of the biggest things she said to me was, I never thought something like this would happen in my family. I mean, how many of us ever say or think something like that? And she said, all of a sudden this happens and you become an advocate because you don't know what else to do. So after we sat down, we put together an hour-long special just to try to create awareness and to showcase more of this interview that she did. There was no way that I wanted this to be a two-minute story, because what she had to say was so important, and her whole idea of alerting other people, this can happen. Please protect yourself. Please be safe. Please find somewhere to go. There are resources out there. That we did run an hour-long story, and, you know, I've always been proud because it did win a ton of awards, but I said what was most rewarding was actually going to Take Back the Night right after this special aired, and the crowd was 5 times bigger than it had ever been. Oh. And people were clamoring to share their stories or to support others. And I'm talking a very well-mixed crowd, ages, men and women, race. It was one of those nights, honestly, for the record books, where you walk away and you feel like, okay, I made a difference. We all made a difference. What I found interesting now, though, in kind of tracking Denise since she and I had the chance to sit down, she has really gone off more as a quiet advocate, and it's because of OJ and Nicole's children. Mm-hmm. They're growing up. They now have grandchildren, and I believe this is their way of protecting those kids and their kids' future.
Understandably. Yeah. Understandably.
Yeah, you live with this your entire life, but at some point, what do you do to help those young people move on and not have to be under this shadow all the time? So I think that's just a really interesting way. She is out there advocating. She still does very small fundraising things where she helps local shelters get money they need so that people have somewhere to go when they need to feel safe. And one of the biggest things that she did was the notification program. It automatically lets a survivor know the person who assaulted them is getting out of jail or prison. Otherwise, what a surprise when that person gets out and the survivor doesn't know and that person ends up on their doorstep. So that is a wonderful system for those who need to know these kinds of things.
Absolutely critical. And again, you know, Sexual Violence Awareness Month, and we have a young woman. I'm not going to her name, because say her name, 19-year-old Milwaukeean Sade Carlina Robinson has been brutally murdered by a white man that apparently it appears that they work together. And so, all of these things come such a full circle in a not great way. You know, we've made some improvements, I think, you know, speaking out more and more women have. I've talked about when my experiences with sexual assault on my show before, that women need to speak out. This notification network, I mean, what a no-brainer, you know. Gee whiz,
yeah, exactly.
You think? But we needed advocates like Denise Brown to make that happen. And thank goodness for them. And thank goodness for your great work to help make Take Back the Night what it has become. And for those of you that aren't familiar with Take Back the Night, it's in reference to the idea, and this would get bandied about in some sexual assault trials, that, oh, well, this woman was walking home at night by herself. And, well, you know, maybe she was kind of, did she have on a short skirt type of thing? That, no, you should be able to walk home at night by yourself and not have to fear that you may be assaulted or dismembered and killed. Thank you so much for your time, Terry. I really appreciate it. Such a moment here. Thanks. That's Terry Barr of Civic Media. I'm Maggie Dawn. Stay put, everybody. We're going to turn the page and move on to some other news when we come back after these brief messages.
Friday on Nightlight, I'm joined by Emerson Lehman, Rob Thomas, and Terry Barr.
It's Nightlight with Pete Schwava from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Farm animals are great recyclers. They eat things that we can't and then create quality products for us to enjoy, like milk and protein. And when farm animals get old and pass away, their contribution to recycling doesn't end there. I'm Charity Seebecker from the Midwest Farm Report, and Jeff Sauer is the owner of Organic Waste Connections, and they help farmers continue that recycling process.
On the positive side, we just see, you know, I always tell everybody the rumen in the cow's stomach. That rumen is a very valuable commodity. So when that rumen has a biology in it that's working in that cow, most of our dairy farms do a very good job and take care of their cows. So they have a balanced diet. So that rumen doesn't stop. Now when it goes into compost, we have that balanced stomach. That the rumen that brings a lot of biology into that compost is beneficial going to the soil.
That was Jeff Sauer, owner of Organic Waste Connections. He says it's not just their clients who are proud, as local communities now have peace of mind knowing responsible animal management is in their backyards. I'll have a look at your closing markets right after this.
We're changing it up on our next farm adventure east. I'm Pam Yonke. Come on along. We're going to Cape Cod, October 19th through the 26th, starting in Boston and visiting a nearby dairy, then out to Martha's Vineyards, where we'll find out about alpacas and experience a sand dunes adventure, plus cranberry production. They don't do it like we do. Visit holidayvacations.com, enter keyword Pam for more information and a travel video, or call 888-557-1024 brochure.
I look at this dairy cow, and again, it's the animal that I love. The things that this dairy cow can do and the way that she can produce milk, to me, there is no substitute for milk in the world. And to be able to keep cows and help cows produce that for people, to me, that's a privilege. I'm Dr. Bill Zimmer. Nutrition and microbials, commonly called probiotics. That's BioVet. Learn more at bio-vet.com.
Innovation, that's BioVet.
I'm Charity Seebecker from the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at 435 and a half, up 6 3/4. New crop corn closed at 472, up 6 cents. Cash beans closed at 1174, that's up 14 3/4. And new crop beans closed at 1176 1/4, and that's up 12 cents. Cash wheat closed at 556, up 4 1/4. And new crop wheat closed at 570 3/4, and that's up 4.5 cents. May Class 3 milk contract is trading at 1644, up 42 cents. And June milk is trading at 1682, up 29 cents. Barrel cheese closed at 157 1/4, that's up 2.5 cents. 40-pound block cheese closed at 153.5, that was up 2.5 cents as well. And the double A butter closed at 292, and that is up 2 3/4. From the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Mostly sunny today and a bit breezy as winds are whipping out of the northwest at 30 miles per hour, dragging our high temperatures down to the mid-50s. Sunshine stays abundant the entire weekend, and we flirt with the 70s by tomorrow and put that on repeat for Sunday too. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 57.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Step on up and enjoy what's on tap today. Local talk about the Valley and all of Wisconsin. In fact, it's on tap every day. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Ah!
Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. My thanks to my colleague Terry Barr for taking a moment to reflect and pause for a bit, given O.J. Simpson's passing. And a tidbit of news came across my radar this week that relates to this sort of curse of male aggression, I guess, is one way to put it. That we as a society, not just women, that we all pay for. There's a case that's happening in California where a guy has sued a group of women for saying that he went out on dates with, for saying unkind things about him on Facebook. $2 million. And some of the facts in the case are just gross. Like this one woman basically told him, I'll take a pass on getting together with you. I'm busy. And somehow he found her on some other social media app, saw a picture, figured out where she was, and then went there. I mean, and this guy's suing her because she then talked about it and named the guy. And these sorts of lawsuits aren't actually new. So on occasion, women have tried to get together on the interwebs, create like a private Facebook group or another repository of information about manipulative, scary, creepy, not good dudes. And these, try to find one right now, publicly on the internet. If you're sitting there, try to go find the bad dudes website. You can't find them. Which is interesting. And the reason is these guys end up suing. And it's like, listen, it's not libel or slander if the thing is true. And I'm not saying that it's necessarily a good thing, but we are all also all very aware of the fact that heavens to Betsy, do not send someone that you don't think, if you have a whisper of a doubt that you're not going to spend the rest of your life with them, don't send that person a nude picture. Because the media is replete with stories of women who have had nude photographs that have been texted or otherwise shared with partners or people that they're interested in, and young women and girls, minors, who then effectively are extorted, or men send them, if they're rejected, send them around to their workplaces or families. It's this curse of male aggression, the entitlement to women's bodies. Appropriate to make note in this Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Again, my thanks to Terry Barr. If you want to hear our discussion, our reflections about what was going on in the 90s surrounding O.J. Simpson, given the fact of his recent passing at 76 from cancer, you can find that at civicmedia.us. But there were two other things I wanted to talk about. Calvin was kind enough to find some really interesting sound for me related to Trump's hush money trial. Now, first hour I spent talking about the documents case down in Florida and what a disaster that's become because of the bad faith and incompetence of the judge that's presiding over that case. So probably the only case that might actually get tried before the election is the hush money case. This is the one in Manhattan trial court. I hate this criminal case. I mean, I think he should be criminally tried, but it's too late. There's a whole gamut of problems with it. It's effectively a paper crime. Yes, he paid someone off, but as I like to remind people, this is back in the day where the most serious infraction, or one of the most serious infractions that we're worried about Donald Trump, in addition to the accusations, credible, many accusations of sexual assault, was the fact that he slept with a Playboy playmate and then paid her off to keep her quiet. That was like the big scandal about Trump when he first got into the White House. Of course, on the heels of the grab him by the you-know-whats tape with Billy Bush. This is not the most serious thing. This isn't the most serious wrongdoing of Donald Trump. And it happened 8 years ago. And I don't think the average person in the United States cares all that much about this. I think it may add fuel to the fire of like, oh, I'm being persecuted. I think this is a lose-lose. You convict him, he murders himself. I mean, are they really going to lock him up for this? Not let the guy be out on the campaign trail? Because he paid off a woman he slept with and didn't report it correctly on his campaign finance forms? Yes, it's a crime, but I don't like any of it. It's a lose-lose. You convict him, you murder him, he's acquitted, then he goes, oh, it's political prosecutions. This one just stinks. There's no good outcome here. And it's the least of the criminal problems. Turns out, I'm not the only one that thinks this. If you remember, the lawyer that became so famous because of this was a guy by the name of Michael Avenatti, who's now spending 19 years in a California state prison for fraud and stealing from his clients. Not the most reliable narrator, I grant you, but also not a dummy. This was Stormy Daniels' lawyer. Ari Melber, a journalist with NBC, interviewed Avenatti from state prison in California. We got the sound. Let's take it. So this is Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' lawyer, the guy who kicked off this whole, pardon the pun, storm that has led to this criminal case being that one district attorney ago in Manhattan, they dropped the case. Then this district attorney got elected. Then they talked about it. And then they bring it back. Some people call it the zombie case because it's gotten killed and come back to life so many times. 8 years old. I don't like this one. I think it's a lose-lose. Meaning a lose-lose if your cause is the cause of justice and accountability, transparency, and, hey, we all should be doing the right thing. Let's listen. You can just run the cuts, Calvin, because I think they can go just back to back. This is Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' lawyer, just this past week being interviewed by Ari Melber about Avenatti's thoughts about this criminal trial, the jury selection of which is going to start on Monday.
I think this is the wrong case at the wrong time, Ari. I think that the case is in many ways stale at this juncture. You're talking about conduct that occurred some 8 years ago. I think the fact that it's occurring in state court in New York is a mistake. And I think that when you are going to potentially deprive tens of millions of Americans of their choice for the presidency of the United States, I think it's a mistake to do it based on a case of this nature. I was hoping, frankly, that there would have been less hand-wringing, less bedwetting, and that the January 6th case would have been filed in a more timely manner. There's no excuse or reason as to why that case could not have been brought in 2021, and it should have been brought in 2021. And had it been brought in 2021, we would not find ourselves in the situation that we're in right now. But my point is one just of trial dynamics. Who's going to tell the story? And the problem is that if the prosecution relies predominantly on Michael Cohen, and, you know, documents don't admit themselves into evidence. You know, I see various legal commentators talk about, well, this is a document case. Well, that may be true to a certain degree, but you've still got to have somebody on the stand that tells the story. And to say that Michael Cohen is a problem witness would be an understatement.
Which, okay, let's just observe the irony here. Michael Cohen, convicted criminal lawyer, being criticized for being a convicted criminal lawyer by a convicted criminal lawyer about a case about a lying, cheating politician. Michael Avenatti, sleazebag lawyer that he is, fraudster, thievery guy, he's right. The cases, in my opinion, that absolutely are the most important criminal cases of this century are the Donald Trump steals national security secrets, stores them in a bathroom, and we don't know who they've been shown to. We don't know if we have all the documents back, or whose lives have been put at risk, or maybe even potentially lost, because Donald Trump wanted to have these documents for what reason? That case, extremely important, and, you know, the insurrection case. And what are we getting? We're getting he made up loan numbers, inflated his assets, which is terrible. And I think that's a serious case, and he's going to lose money, and he's not going to do business in New York for a while. But what do we get on the criminal side? That's a civil case. What do we get on the criminal side? Oh, he didn't report the hush money payment to the centerfold on his federal elections forms. Which is also Avenatti's point is it should have been brought in federal court, but the federal DOJ passed on that case. Everybody's like, oh, they're all witch hunts. Well, the feds passed on charging Trump for federal elections crimes. They didn't prosecute him on everything. Mark from Prairie du Sac, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Yeah, it's just disgusting that Trump has gotten away with so much for so long, and this is what we're left with. Yeah, but getting back to the judge, that I point to the Constitution, and these guys claim to be such big constitutionalists. The Constitution actually says, during good behavior, shall hold their offices during good behavior. I mean, that there's nothing in the Constitution that says lifetime appointment. We've just, you know, left it at that, you know, pretended it says that, but it doesn't say that. It says during good behavior, and the behavior that Judge Eileen Cannon down there in Florida is just bad behavior, as, you know, we've seen in our own Supreme Court. It's bad behavior, and they should be bounced from office. I mean, simply on that.
Yeah, I agree, Mark. She's a disaster. People don't use that text, which is interesting, because it's like, well, what amounts to bad behavior? You know, and I've made this case about Justice Kavanaugh's manner of conducting himself in his confirmation hearings, disqualifying. Judge Eileen Cannon, so incompetent that she now has clearly demonstrated either bad faith and or bias. What? Can't we demand more of our judges? 855-75-CIVIC. 855-752-4842. You want to get your 2 cents, 5 cents, or a buck's worth in this afternoon? I want to hear from you. But I agree with disgraced sleazebag lawyer Michael Avenatti. This is the wrong case. It's the wrong time. It's not. This is a lose-lose proposition for those of us who are in the business of trying to hold the powerful accountable. There's just no way that this goes well. Annie from Watertown, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show.
Yeah, I was tempted to call about the whole idea that the OJ thing sort of got buried by the long, long history of Los Angeles Police Department racism and domestic violence sort of fell by the wayside. It was like totally surrounding my life at that point, and I could, you know, see things so clear. But also along the lines, now you're talking about Avenatti, I was bored enough to watch, I think it was on Peacock, the Stormy Daniels flick documentary,
yep,
which really opened my eyes. Because, I mean, yeah, I could, you know, like, just not stop.
Hang on, Annie. I'm so sorry. Please hang on the line. Calvin will let you know that I'll take you as soon as we come back after these very brief, very important messages. Don't go anywhere, anybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. If you want to get in for the last segment of this week, 855-752-4842. Back with me and Annie after these important messages.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
It's 2024 and Worthington, Minnesota continues to shine. We've expanded so many things. It's a time of growth.
We've expanded recreation activities with our indoor ice arena, our indoor turf rec center and playground, and our outdoor water park, Water World, is ready for another season. Our schools have expanded, and so has our industry. We're continuing to expand our population also, with lots ready to build on Glenwood Heights. So let's grow together in Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot. Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was when they moved the camera. Whenever it's like the red alert. The,
right.
Yeah. That was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to like fake like.
Right. Lean left. Great. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, the Chippewa Valley's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
Love, forgive me.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking and concluding our thoughts about Donald Trump's hush money criminal trial that's going to kick off with jury selection on Monday. This is a lose-lose case. My opinion. I ran out of time with Annie from Watertown before our quick break. So, Annie, I wanted to give you a chance to finish your thoughts. Thanks for your patience.
Yeah, it's very revealing, like, what exactly, I mean, Stormy Daniels ends up being quite a victim of this whole thing, which is like, gee, a woman getting screwed over by the system, especially getting involved in court. I mean, the court did more harm to me than my abuser ever did.
I'm so sorry.
Like I said, I really wasn't interested that much in it, but you know, I watched it and it was very, very interesting. You might get a lot out of it.
I will check it out, Annie. And I'll just say from my experience, I felt re-victimized by the legal system in the United States when I had a case that proceeded through court. The prior case that I had was handled in Denmark, and I didn't feel victimized by the legal system there. There are different ways of handling violence, cases involving violence against women, and we do a really terrible job of it here. It being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, thank you so much, Annie, for your call and for sharing and your thoughts. I will check out the Stormy Daniels film. If you or someone that you care about is experiencing intimate partner violence, you can call this hotline, 1-800-656-4673. Calvin, if you would include that in today's show notes, I would appreciate it. That's 1-800-656-4673. The last thing I wanted to talk about today with everyone is this negotiated deal that just went down today. It's been some breaking news. But over the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, also known as FISA, which was passed in the wake of the September 11th attacks in 2001, specifically Section 702 of FISA. There was an odd group of bipartisan legislators that passed an extension of 702 this afternoon, and it was Republicans and Democrats. And what was the point of contention is that Section 702 permits our intelligence apparatus to basically seize communications of foreign nationals that go over U.S.-based communication channels, so think email, social media, and the like. And when they do that, they're also sometimes capturing communications of U.S. citizens. They're basically in a database, and it can be searched. And they can do all of this without a warrant. Now, I want to be really clear here. Section 702 was not what was used related to the investigations by the U.S. intelligence agencies regarding Russian interference in the 2016 election. Those were under warrants under a different portion of FISA. Okay, so don't get it confused there. But all of a sudden, interesting bedfellows here. You had Jim Jordan aligned with civil rights activists saying we need to put a warrant requirement into Section 702 of FISA. The bipartisan solution that occurred today did not include newly for the first time a warrant requirement. It just kicked Section 702 out for 2 years. Now, the reason that they got, or Mike Johnson was able to get hardline MAGA Republicans in the House of Representatives to agree to that is because it's only a 2-year extension. The original extension was planned on for 5 years. But the MAGA Republicans in the House figured, oh, well, Trump will win in 2 years, and then we can fix Section 702. So it's just very, very, very interesting maneuverings going on here. In the negotiations, they ended up rejecting a proposal to ban FBI agents and intelligence analysts from using Americans' identifiers like email addresses to query the database of these messages swept up by this monitoring program. Interesting, right? And again, you had Jerry Nadler, Democrat from New York, and Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, both arguing for the warrant requirement. But isn't that weird? Never thought I'd see those two, Jerry and Jim, arguing on the same side of any issue. They did pass some other significant amendments. Allowing 702 to be used to gather intelligence on foreign narcotics trafficking organization, to vet potential foreign visitors to the United States, empowering certain congressional leaders to observe classified hearings before a court that oversees national security surveillance, and expanding the types of companies with access to foreign communications that can be required to participate in the program. And by the way, the portion of FISA that requires the warrants, and while there are limits on what this, all this information, whether under 702 or the portion that requires warrants, the federal government has abused and gone beyond these restrictions in the past. And they've used it for both quote unquote liberals and quote unquote conservatives. For example, they improperly queried for information about Black Lives Matter protesters, as well as people suspected of participating in the January 6th riot and insurrection. Which brings me to the 2 points that I want to make about this. The first is, whether you are a conservative or a liberal, transparency and accountability in government matters. And we got to be able to call these things out on both sides. I don't like the idea of warrantless snooping around Americans' emails. Makes me really uncomfortable. And the second thing is, understand that in every important public policy question, it's always a matter of two values at odds. Here are national security and our rights to privacy. Don't let people tell you that the complicated is simple, because it isn't. I'm Maggie Dawn. That's it for this week. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together. Have a great weekend, everybody.
From Lake Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5, The Tap.
Hey everybody, Todd Allbaugh. Monday noon to 2, will Matt Flynn run for Supreme Court? We'll find out. Join us on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast format? Search no more. Find it now on the WCFW website at wcfw.fm. Your news just for the Eau Claire area. I'm James Kelly with WCFW News.
We've all felt left out.
And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Biden has a warning for Iran as it prepares to launch an attack on Israeli military targets.